When you look down at your hands right now, like, what do you actually see?
I mean, you probably just see skin, some knuckles.
Yeah, maybe a few veins, right?
Yeah.
You think of it as this solid matter that's just governed by these strict, uncompromising rules of biology and chemistry.
Totally.
But what if the very cellular structure you are looking at is actually just light?
Oh, man.
And
Yeah.
not just standard light, but this expression of light that is deliberately, like mathematically, slowed down just to precipitate into the physical world.
It requires a massive cognitive pivot to even think about that,
It really did.
because we are just deeply conditioned to view matter and light as these totally distinct phenomena, you know, like they're on entirely different spectrums,
Right.
rather than seeing matter as just this derivative sort of slowed down state of one single underlying reality.
Well, that pivot is basically our mission for today's deep dive. We are unpacking the mind-bending intersection of ancient spiritual poetry and cutting-edge quantum physics.
It's quite a combo.
It is. And we've got an incredible stack of sources today. We're looking at an in-depth dialogue with Dr. Pravir Malik. He's a researcher and the founder of Key Quantum.
Yeah, and we also have his really comprehensive notes on this framework he calls quantum restoration.
Exactly. And I promise you, by the time we finish this deep dive, the way you look at a biological cell, or even just a piece of silver, is going to fundamentally change.
Oh, absolutely.
So, okay, let's unpack this. How on earth does a researcher spend 30 years immersed in a spiritual poem every single morning, and then somehow translate that daily practice into peer-reviewed physics papers in, like, mainstream engineering journals?
Yeah, it's the bridge between the two seems completely non-existent at first
Right.
until you actually look at the specific text, because Malik's entire cosmological framework is rooted in this epic poem called Savitri.
Written by Sri Aurobindo, right?
Exactly. And Malik has read it daily since, I think, the mid-1990s.
Wow.
But he didn't treat it as just literature. He treated it as a conceptual map.
Like a blueprint.
Yeah. The imagery in Savitri literally rewired his perceptual models. And that led him to pose this mathematically rich, highly disruptive question to standard physics.
Which was?
He basically asked, what are the physical and mathematical implications if light could travel at infinite speed?
Which immediately creates friction with literally the foundation of modern physics. I mean, the speed of light is roughly 186,000 miles per second, and that is the ultimate cosmic speed limit.
Right, standard physics treats it as this completely unyielding law.
But if I'm reading Malik's notes correctly, he looks at that absolute limit
Yeah.
and suggests the current laws of physics might not actually be laws at all.
No, he says they might just be deeply entrenched habits.
Habits. That is, I mean, if we connect this to the bigger picture, that distinction between a law and a habit is the linchpin of his entire theory.
It really is, because if the universe's mechanics are just habits, well, then by definition, they're malleable.
They can change.
Exactly. They possess this capacity for modification, and that radically alters how we even interact with technology at the quantum level.
So let's ground that in something concrete for a second, like quantum computing. Because mainstream players like Google or IBM, they approach quantum computing as this extraordinarily fast optimization calculator.
Right. They leverage superposition and entanglement to run these really complex probability models.
Yeah, solving equations in a few minutes, that would take classical computers millennia to figure out.
But Malik looks at that exact same hardware and argues that the mainstream approach is entirely missing the actual architecture of what the quantum layer is doing.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
So he argues that treating a quantum computer as just a hyper-efficient microchip.
It trivializes it. It trivializes the whole quantum layer.
Okay, so what is it doing then, in his view?
In Malik's framework, quantum computation is actually an arbitration.
An arbitration.
Yeah, it is the literal threshold where this invisible, infinite speed reality negotiates with finite constraints just to precipitate into our visible physical world.
So it's sort of the difference between using a universal translator to just balance your checkbook versus using it to decode the actual operating system of reality.
That is a great way to put it.
But if quantum mechanics is an arbitration layer, how does Malik define what is actually being arbitrated?
Yeah.
Like, what's negotiating with what?
So the arbitration is between multiple layers of unmanifest potential.
Unmanifest potential, okay.
Yeah, because in a classical physics model, everything is just this predetermined sequence of cause and effect, right?
A causes B, B causes C.
Exactly. But in Malik's model, the physical form that emerges from the quantum layer is actively negotiated. It's based on the interacting possibilities of that infinite light slowing down.
So the universe isn't just executing some pre-written script.
No, not at all. It is actively resolving possibilities into solid matter right at that quantum boundary.
Man, those are massive, highly abstract concepts. And moving from a philosophical interpretation of a poem to publishing functional models in IE conferences and Springer Nature.
Yeah, it requires rigorous, testable math.
Right. So how did he build the bridge from this poetic concept of infinite light to actual applied equations?
Well, the origin story of the math is actually quite cinematic.
Oh, I love this part.
Right. So about a decade ago, Malik was having dinner in Berkeley, California, with this guy who described himself as a closet mathematician.
Which is a great title.
And they were sitting at a candlelit restaurant with those paper tablecloths.
The absolute ultimate canvas for an unsolicited lecture.
Oh, completely. So the mathematician just begins sketching equations directly onto the paper, describing all these complex cosmic dynamics.
Just right there at dinner.
Just right there. And Malik noted that as he watched the math unfold in real time, he actually slipped into this subtle trance state.
Really?
Yeah, where the boundary between conceptual thought and physical matter just seemed to blur for him.
Wow.
And he woke up the next morning with this undeniable compulsion to express his own worldview mathematically.
That is wild.
It initiated this relentless 90-day creative output. He just translated his intuitive fractal theories into a highly unique mathematical language.
See, I want to dig into how that unique math actually functions, because the sources detail how he applies it to the element of silver.
Oh, yeah. The silver example is fascinating.
Because in standard chemistry, silver is just atomic number 47. You know, it's metal.
Right.
But Malik maps its holistic properties, like its high electrical conductivity, its reflectivity, and its historical use as an antimicrobial agent.
Yeah.
He distills all of those macro-level functional identities into a single equation. So my question is, how does a math equation capture the essence of a physical property like antimicrobial action?
Well, it works by mapping macro properties backward into their underlying fractal geometry.
Okay, break that down for me.
So in standard science, we treat conductivity and antimicrobial action as completely unrelated properties of the same element, right?
Yeah, they just happen to exist in silver.
Exactly. But Malik's equations posit that these properties are divergent physical expressions of a single unified quantum signature.
Right.
He built an equation that mathematically connects the geometry of how silver reflects light directly to the geometry of how its ions disrupt bacterial cell walls.
So he argues they are fractal iterations of the same underlying quantum instruction.
Yes. The same exact instruction, just expressing itself in different physical ways.
Which implies a level of intrinsic design that completely challenges deeply entrenched scientific dogmas.
Oh, it throws them out the window.
And this brings me to a massive point of friction. Because anyone with a background in physics is going to point to the double slit experiment right now.
Naturally.
We don't need to rehack all the basics of wave-particle duality, but the interference pattern essentially proves that unobserved light exists as this wave of probabilities, right? Until a measurement forces it to collapse into a particle.
That is the standard view, yes.
It has been the settled bedrock of quantum mechanics since the 1800s. So how does Malik's mathematical model handle the double slit anomaly without relying on that standard crutch of superposition?
So standard physics treats the interference pattern as a black box of probability. We just accept the weird result without truly understanding the ontological reality of the photon inside the box.
We just say, well, it's spooky and weird.
Exactly. But Malik completely discards the probabilistic black box.
Okay.
He interprets the famous interference pattern not as some strange statistical anomaly, but as a direct physical expression of the intrinsic wholeness of light.
Wait, physically, what does that mean for the single photon moving through the slit? Is it like carrying extra data?
Basically, yeah.
How does it know it is part of a whole in a way that generates an interference pattern even when they're fired one at a time?
To understand the mechanism, you really have to go back to his premise of light traveling at infinite speed.
Okay, the infinite speed concept again.
Right, because at infinite speed, distance and time collapse to zero.
Because it's everywhere all at once.
Exactly. Therefore, a single photon is not a discrete, isolated bullet of energy traveling through space.
Yeah.
Because of its origin in infinite speed, it is continually fundamentally connected to the original indivisible whole of light.
So the non-locality isn't some spooky action at a distance, as Einstein called it.
No.
It is a literal shared identity.
Yes.
Yes.
the photon is actively carrying and expressing the signature of the hole. So the interference pattern on the screen isn't a probability wave of collapsing.
It's not.
No, it is the physical derivative of that wholeness projecting itself into finite space. The photon's actively differentiating an original unity into a manifested multiplicity.
Okay, so if we follow that logic, mm-hmm. and light is this original wholeness slowing down to differentiate into physical matter,
right.
that matter must have an architecture. I mean, it can't just precipitate into random chaos.
Exactly. According to Malik's framework, as light slows from infinite speed, it organizes structurally around four foundational quantum energies.
And these are presence, power, knowledge, and harmony.
You got it.
I have to admit, those four terms, presence, power, knowledge, and harmony, they sound like philosophical archetypes, you know,
mm-hmm.
not structural physics.
I know, they sound very esoteric.
Yeah, I'm looking at the periodic table in my head right now,
okay.
and it is honestly hard to see philosophical harmony in a bunch of inert gases or transition metals.
Sure.
Walk me through the mechanics of how an element actually fits into this.
Okay, let's map it directly onto the architecture of the periodic table. So you know it's divided into the S, P, D, and F blocks.
Vaguely remember that from high school chemistry, yes.
Well, Malik correlates each block mathematically with one of these foundational energies. Take the S block, which contains elements like hydrogen and helium.
Okay.
These are the engines of stellar nuclear fusion. They are raw, highly reactive energy. So mechanistically, they align perfectly with power.
Okay. Power makes sense for hydrogen fusion, but what about knowledge? How does the chemical element possess knowledge?
Think about the P block. That houses carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen.
The building blocks of life.
Exactly. These elements possess very specific valence electron structures that allow for highly complex, stable bonding.
Right.
And that bonding capability is what allows them to hold and transfer the intricate blueprints for biological life.
Ah, I see.
The structural capacity to store and transmit complex information is the physical manifestation of knowledge.
Wow, okay. Then the D block, which is full of transition metals used for like infrastructure and solid structural foundations.
That maps to presence.
Presence.
Yeah.
And the F block, which contains those massive, highly complex actinides and lanthanides.
The ones that exhibit intricate collective behaviors.
Right, that maps to harmony.
Exactly. The mapping holds up structurally. The physical attributes of the elements are literal macro expressions of those four quantum vectors.
That's just, wow.
Yeah.
And the sources take this a massive step further, moving from chemistry into biology.
Oh, this is my favorite part.
There is this fascinating anecdote about Malik trying to better understand his wife, Chitvan's work in cellular health. He was reading a textbook on biological macromolecules, and he was out hiking in Tilden Park, and he had this huge epiphany.
Right. He realized that the fundamental building blocks inside every living cell mirror those exact same four energies.
The parallels are crazy when you actually examine the functional roles of the macromolecules. Here's where it gets really interesting. Let me map out how he aligned them, because the elegance of the logic here is just compelling.
Go for it.
So he realized that proteins, which provide structural architecture and stability to the cell, those represent presence.
Yep.
Polysaccharides, which manage energy storage and release, they represent power.
Exactly.
Nucleic acids, like DNA and RNA carrying genetic instructions, that's knowledge.
Right.
And lipids, which form the membranes that integrate and synchronize all the cell's components, represent harmony.
It's a perfect mirror of the periodic table blocks.
It is. But how did he make the mathematical leap to connect a physical lipid to a quantum concept like harmony? I mean, it can't just be a neat analogy, right?
What's fascinating here is that the leap involves the use of Hilbert spaces.
Okay, remind me. A Hilbert space in standard quantum mechanics is usually for tracking particle spin or something.
Right. It's a complex, multidimensional mathematical landscape used to map all the possible states of a quantum system.
Okay.
Malik adapted this mathematical tool. He mapped the qualitative states of the four foundational energies, presence, power, knowledge, harmony, as actual mathematical coordinates within a Hilbert space.
So instead of mapping spin or velocity, he is mapping the vectors of these four qualities.
Exactly. And the vectors in that multidimensional space dictate how unmanifest light collapses into physical form.
So the math dictates the biology.
Precisely. The mathematical coordinates of harmony functionally dictate the precipitation of a lipid, because a lipid's biological role creating boundaries, managing integration, synchronizing cell signaling, that is just the physical translation of the quantum vector of harmony.
Okay, so if the macromolecules of our biology are built on flexible quantum habits governed by these four energies, rather than fixed immutable laws,
right,
then the way those biological blocks change over time has to be fundamentally re-examined.
Right.
Which brings us to a massive point of friction regarding evolution.
Oh, yes, because standard evolutionary theory relies entirely on the neo-Darwinian model.
Random mutation and natural selection.
Exactly.
Right. The standard model basically says evolution is a slow, accidental software patch. An organism undergoes a random genetic mutation, and if environmental pressure happens to filter out the organisms without the mutation, the new trait survives.
Which takes immense stretches of time, millions of years.
But Malik introduces a concept he calls aspiration. Mm-hmm. How does an organism's stress rewrite its genetic code in real time? That sounds like magic.
It's not magic, it's math. Yeah. Malik's math models a mechanism where environmental pressure does not just filter out the losers.
What does it do?
It interacts directly with the quantum layer. Intense environmental pressure creates a biological resonance, what he terms aspiration.
Aspiration.
Yes. This intense, concentrated need reaches a specific threshold that acts as a vector, and it interacts with a quantum library.
A quantum library. Functioning as, like, a repository of latent genetic blueprints.
Functioning as a Hilbert space of unmanifest potential variations.
Now,
Malik modeled this using the sudden evolutionary appearance of protective exoskeletons in insects.
Because in a classical model, developing a complex hard shell via random mutation takes an agonizingly long time.
Right, but Malik's mathematics suggests that the intense survival pressure actually invokes the four foundational powers. The biological necessity creates a frequency that matches a dormant vector in the quantum library.
And that triggers a phase shift.
Exactly. The material substrate of the organism answers the call of necessity. It collapses that unmanifest potential into physical genetic expression in just a few generations.
So the organism isn't just surviving a filter. It is actively rewriting its own source code by reaching into the quantum layer.
That's exactly what his math shows.
And the notes indicate he scales this concept from insects all the way up to cosmological proportions.
He does. He applies the same mathematical vectors to the Big Bounce theory in cosmology.
The Big Bounce. That's the theory that posits that the universe endlessly expands, collapses back in on itself at a big crunch.
Right, and then expands again in an infinite loop of destruction and rebirth.
A closed loop system where nothing ultimately escapes destruction.
Right, well, Malik's equations suggest that the universe is only stuck in that destructive loop because it hasn't fully incarnated the four foundational powers.
What do you mean?
The matter in the universe hasn't solved the problem of perfect integration yet.
But if matter itself evolves through aspiration, like we just talked about with the bugs, if it develops a higher degree of responsiveness to presence, power, knowledge, and harmony, what happens to the cosmology?
The structural limits of the universe change.
Really?
Yeah. If the matter comprising the universe achieves the correct balance of those four energies, the mathematical necessity for the collapse is actually removed.
Wow.
The cosmological structure can evolve to expand perpetually, continuously renewing itself without the need for a destructive crunch.
That completely upends the nihilism of modern cosmology.
It really does. It gives the universe a purpose.
But I want to bring this all the way down from the expanding universe directly to the listener right now.
Sure.
What does this mean for the physical body sitting in a chair listening to this? The final piece of the source material covers quantum restoration.
Right.
How does a framework of infinite light and Hilbert spaces translate into actual medical science?
It translates through the lens of cellular asymmetry.
Cellular asymmetry.
Yes. In Malik's framework, an illness is fundamentally a quantum distortion.
Okay.
A cell becomes unhealthy when there is an energetic phase imbalance among the four powers in its foundational Hilbert space.
So a disease isn't initially a biological breakdown. It is a breakdown of the quantum blueprint governing the biology.
Exactly. The physical breakdown is just the trailing indicator.
Wow.
In a healthy biological cell, presence, power, knowledge, and harmony are constantly interacting in this perfect dynamic equilibrium. When illness manifests, the mathematics show that one of those vectors has begun to dominate the space, which forces the others to be unnaturally suppressed.
But if the illness originates as a phase imbalance in the quantum layer, how do you even treat a quantum distortion? You can't just throw a chemical pharmaceutical at it.
No, you can't. You treat it by recalibrating the underlying vectors.
How?
Malik's blueprint for quantum restoration theorizes the use of highly sensitive nanoscale instrumentation.
Okay, so tiny, tiny machines.
Exactly. These instruments would be calibrated to read the specific energetic imbalances at the quantum threshold of the affected cells.
So once the instrumentation identifies that, say, the vector for harmony is suppressed, how do you actively restore it?
You introduce precise quantum-level interventions to force a recalibration. And Malik connects this to non-invasive therapies currently being developed, including his wife's actual work with targeted electromagnetic frequencies.
Electromagnetic frequencies are, at their core, just highly specific forms of light.
Precisely. This raises an important question. What happens when you introduce that light? By bombarding the asymmetrical cells with specific, calculated frequencies of light, the intervention theoretically reminds the cellular structure of its original quantum harmony.
So the intervention isn't trying to chemically force a biological reaction at all?
No. It is mathematically shifting the vectors in the cell's Hilbert space back into optimal proportion.
And then the physical biology simply follows the corrected quantum blueprint.
Exactly. The healing happens from the quantum layer up.
That is just, it is incredible to look at the through line of these sources.
It's quite a journey.
Right. Because we started with a researcher meditating on a 10,000-line spiritual poem. And that poem provoked a radical question about light traveling at infinite speed.
Yep.
Which then birthed the new mathematical application of Hilbert spaces, which reframed the periodic table, redefined the evolutionary capabilities of our cellular macromolecules, and has now provided a testable technological blueprint for advanced cellular medicine using light frequencies.
It really demonstrates the immense utility of breaking down the artificial barriers between different domains of human inquiry.
Definitely.
When deep intuitive insight is married to rigorous mathematical application, you stop looking at reality as the static machine. You begin to understand it as a deeply responsive architecture.
So what does this all mean?
Mm-hmm.
It means we are not just localized biology reacting to fixed laws. The laws of physics might just be habits, and habits can be broken, rewritten, and upgraded through necessity and aspiration.
Beautifully said. The physical world is actively waiting for our conscious engagement to determine what it becomes next.
I love that. And I want to leave you, the listener, with one final thought to mull over as you go about the rest of your day.
Mm-hmm.
If the absolute foundation of matter is essentially just light that is slowed down to differentiate into physical form, and your biological body is entirely constructed from this slowed down light, you really have to wonder about the mechanics of your own consciousness.
Excellent.
How might your daily internal speed, your states of chronic stress, your moments of intense aspiration, your deepest intentions be acting as a biological vector, literally recalibrating the quantum structure of your cells right this very second?
Something to think about.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the nature of the light around you and stay curious.